You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask your question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. One of the things I talked about a lot at the CMC, in fact, I finished up with it on Friday to wrap up everything that we had talked about all week long and everything we had learned. And if you spend a week at the CMC and you don't learn more than you've probably learned in the last 5 or 10 years, it's either because you're one of those people who just continuously learn, listening or reading to books or attending seminars all the time, or more than likely you just didn't put in the effort while you were there. There is so much information. The number one comment we get, we do a lot of surveys to see how we're doing, see how each speaker does, see how people like each segment and each event that we do throughout the week. And the most common comment we get, and we've gotten this comment from the very first time I ever presented this, and we get it every time, the most common comment is there is so much information that it's hard to take it all in. And that's why we encourage note-taking. We allow people to record it, and that is something unusual. If you go to other seminars, many of them don't let you record anything. We let you record the entire event, including George Gallimore's day on negotiation, Larry Wingett's day. We let you record the whole thing because there's so much information. But what it really comes down to, there's one critical thing that has to happen. And it has to happen no matter how much you learn. Until you change, the learning isn't going to do you much good. It's just going to be information that you have. But you have to make a change in order for that information to really have an impact on your life. And change means that. It means thinking different, but more importantly, it means acting different and doing different things. Now, you do have to start thinking different, but we can't see that. That's the start. But after you think, you have to do something. Learning and thinking is the start, but if you don't do something, nothing is going to happen. Nothing will change. Forget all those goofy books, and there's all kinds of programs out there called The Secret. That was a big one where you could just sit around and think about what you want and it'll happen. Yeah, BS. That doesn't happen ever. You do have to think differently. You do have to keep learning, but you've got to do something. And that something has to be different than what you've been doing. We've all heard the phrase 1,000 times, if you keep doing what you've always done, you'll keep getting what you've always got. But and we hear it all the time because it's absolutely true. So on Friday, I spent a lot of time talking about changing. And that change, you should be able to see it. Not just you, people around you should be able to see what has changed. You have to change long enough to create habits in order for them to really stick. Otherwise, you're going to be working on pure willpower, and that doesn't work because you will run out of willpower. That was one of the more interesting books I've read in quite some time, called The Willpower Instinct. And what they've learned is that willpower is just like a muscle, and it will wear out. If you have to use a lot of willpower on any task, it will decrease the available willpower you have for any other task. So the things that are important, the things you need to change in your daily life, you have to stick with them in the beginning, use the willpower you have until they become habits. And when your changes become habits, then they don't require willpower anymore. They become easy. But they're not easy for the first, I don't know, you can find all kinds of time frames, you know, from different authors and different people, anywhere from 20 days to create a habit to 90 days. I don't think there's any magic number. I think it has a lot to do with you and the habit and how focused you are on it. But in the beginning, the changes you make, and they may be different for everybody, the changes you make, you've got to just push through with pure white-knuckle willpower until they become habits. And I would recommend you only do one at a time because of the willpower factor. If you try to do too many, you're going to run out of willpower. You're not going to turn any of them into habits, and you're going to be frustrated and think this doesn't work. But pick something in your life that needs to change. Figure out something you could do every day to change it, and then start working on it. And just commit to working on it until it becomes easy, and then you'll know you've created a habit. And then you can move on to the next one. But just know that if you don't change, that change isn't physical. If we can't see the change, then nothing in your life is going to change. If you want to run a better business, then you need to do something different every day from what you're doing right now. I can tell you what some of those changes are that apply to almost everybody. I've talked about them before. It's what I call doing the hard work. I've talked about the fact that if you want to create habits that will better your life and better your business, I would start with things like health. And I know this one drives people crazy. I get the emails all the time. But nothing will make a bigger difference in your life than starting with healthier habits. And just pick one at a time. Don't be in a hurry to do this. Depending on your age, you've probably spent the last 20 or 30 years not doing the right stuff, creating bad habits. So don't try to turn it around in a week or a day or even a month. Pick one habit, and you can do it around health, you can do it around money, you can do it around relationships. Those are three big ones that will really kind of jumpstart your plan and create a lot of momentum. So just know you've got to change something. The change needs to be physical. We need to be able to see what you're doing different every day. You need to be able to see it. People on the outside should be able to see it. And then push through until it's no longer hard to do. When it is no longer the hard work, the thing that makes you really uncomfortable, then you move on to the next thing that makes you uncomfortable. And there's a clue there. I was working with somebody at the CMC doing some one-on-one, and she said, "Kevin, you always talk about the fact that the hard work is knowing your numbers and understanding your money and understanding your net worth and tracking your profit and loss every month." She said, "But that's not hard work for me at all. I've always done that. But yet, I don't feel like we're getting where we need to be in our business." And I said, "Okay, well, it's good that you like the numbers. It's good that you're tracking them. And it's not the hard work for you. Everybody's different. And you'll even be different at different times in your life. If you do anything long enough, it becomes easy. So it's no longer the hard work. Then you have to look for the next thing that is the hard work." And here was the question I asked her. I said, "When we think about business," I said, "when you think about the things you've learned here so far this week, tell me the one thing that makes you the most uncomfortable. And she said, oh, that's easy. It's negotiation. And I said, okay, good. That's a clue on where you need to work. And it turns out that in their business, they need to work with agents and brokers in order to get their freight. And she's uncomfortable negotiating. Well, one of the things we teach, and we, you know, George spent a lot of time on it this past week at CMC, was the fact that real win-win negotiation is not about what most people think it's about. It's not about being that hard-nosed negotiator. It's about building relationships. That's what negotiation is all about. So I said, what you're really uncomfortable with is building relationships. So you need to change some habits and just push through them in the beginning, and they will get easier. I said, you need to start creating a list of agents and brokers that you want to work with and calling them. And you need to call two or three every single day until we identify some that you think could be really good. And then you actually need to go visit them. Those are the kind of changes I'm talking about. I'm going to get to a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'll get to your calls and questions. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. We're going to get right to some calls and questions. I'm Kevin Ruth to Missouri. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Well, I've been thinking more and more about pulling off that drive axle. When I get rid of the load I have on, I'm going to fill up and get some empty weights here. And I was talking to a friend of mine that just did it, but he's saying some stuff to me that just doesn't make sense. He's telling me I can put 20,000 pounds on my steer axle. Is that true?
Well, yes and no. Yes, because legally we are allowed to put 20,000 pounds on any single axle, but every component in the axle has to be rated for 20,000 pounds. And I can guarantee you, your front axle isn't rated for 20,000 pounds, and your two steer tires aren't capable of or rated for 20,000 pounds either. So he's technically correct in saying, yes, you can scale 20,000 pounds on a single axle, but that axle and all of its components, including tires, have to be rated for the weight you're carrying. Now, when I talked about building a four-axle unit, I talked about going to maybe a 15,000-pound front axle, and I think I was looking at the XV8-2 Energies, which have a pretty high weight rating, and trying to see if I could get an axle up to the point where it would be legal at around 14 or 15,000.
Well, my idea by doing this is not so I can haul heavier loads on less axles. This, to me, is about, he has said he's picked up a mile to the gallon by pulling that axle off. I'm looking at maximizing my fuel mileage, minimizing what I put on, and maximizing what I get paid to do it.
Yeah, and that makes sense, and you can easily do that with your current setup. When I was going to build the truck from scratch, it doesn't cost that much more to put a 15,000-pound axle in and get a couple of higher-rated tires. So if you ever wanted to put a little more payload on, I was trying to see if I could build a unit on four axles that would scale the same payload as everybody does on five. Now, it doesn't mean that's what I want to go pull, but I just wanted to see if we could do it. What you're doing makes a ton of sense. You don't want to scale that kind of weight.
Then I also had another question that got me thinking. Yes, I had a hellish day yesterday. running through just rain. Felt like half the time I was hydroplaning. Well, I lose stability by going from a double axle to a single.
No, you really won't. I've run single axles for years and years, pulling both doubles and triples. And, you know, if we talk about an unstable unit, triples, there just aren't that many things that are less stable than a set of triples. Any little wiggle up in the front of the unit, it becomes a whiplash effect by the time it gets to that third trailer. And it's why you see sometimes a set of doubles or triples going down the road and the back trailer flips over because of that whiplash effect. If you just change lanes a little too fast, it all gets magnified all the way back to the third trailer. So that's a pretty unstable unit pulling triples, and we do it with single axles all the time.
Right, because all I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be pulling a spread axle 48-foot trailer.
Which is a very stable unit compared to what I was just talking about. I can't imagine. Those are almost two extremes. A triple trailer setup, which is virtually all single axles, single axle tractors, single axle trailers, single axle converters, that's probably, like I said, the least stable. Now you're talking about a spread axle trailer, which is probably the most stable. I mean, it's very difficult to put a spread axle into a slide.
Okay. Then I'm just going to proceed with this, and I'll get the weights and get them to you and see what your recommendations are. And I'm guessing that my rear axle out here on... rear axle here on its own can scale 20,000.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, and it will handle the weight. Again, you're looking to pull light. I've converted many, many tandem axles to single axles and never had a problem.
Okay, and is the sign-up now open for CFC?
It is going to be open as you're hearing this. It will be open tomorrow.
Okay, because, well, then I have an alumnus. I've been to a couple of them.
Yeah, give us a call tomorrow, and we should have everything finalized.
Okay, we will do that.
All right, good talking to you, and keep doing what you're doing. Keep me informed, and... we'll talk to you soon. Let's go to Wisconsin. Becky, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I got two questions. The first one, I'm going to try to find an accountant, you know, close to home that we can go in and talk to. So what are some of the questions to ask them to make sure they understand about trucking? So we don't get somebody that doesn't understand about trucking.
You know, there are some obvious things you could ask, although the odds of finding somebody are pretty slim. You could ask, you know, do you work with owner-operators or small fleets? If so, how many? Those kind of things. But what I don't even necessarily need somebody who works with owner-operators, just somebody who is willing to go research two topics, because that's really all that's different. Business is business. There are two topics that we see accountants screw up all the time, and if your tax preparer is willing to go do the research, and it's a half a day, if that, to go read the regulations on two topics, if they're willing to go do that, I think it would be more important that you felt comfortable with them, you had a good relationship with them, or you felt like it was somebody you could build a good relationship with. And if they were willing to go research depreciation on a highway truck, keyword, if they go looking up depreciation on a truck, they're going to get it wrong every time. They've got to go research how to depreciate a highway tractor, and then they have to learn about per diem for people in the travel industry. I'm not even going to say subject to hours of service anymore because they changed that. They just need to understand there are two totally different per diem systems. So if you immediately say, you know, do you understand per diem? And they jump in and say, oh, yeah, we use per diem all the time. Yes, you do use per diem all the time, but most accountants don't realize there are two totally different systems. And one is for people who are in the business of transporting people, goods, and services. That's what they need to go look up and understand.
Okay. Well, that's easy enough. Yeah, I thought it was going to be more complicated than that, but yeah, so that's the only two differences on the accounting side, I guess.
Yep.
The other thing, please tell me that it's normal to feel crappy the first few days after going completely green and very low carbohydrate, and this will go away?
Oh, yeah, it will. It is totally normal. In fact, I've been hearing from lots and lots of people after this week. Brittany sent me an email this morning saying she's on day four and her head is killing her. Headaches are really common. Low energy is really common. Almost depressed kind of blah feeling. And there are some things you can do that I would recommend. If you get really bad headaches, try to determine whether or not it's because you've cut out caffeine too, which I didn't do. I actually started increasing my coffee intake when I did this. If so, get a little caffeine. That'll help with the headache. But you can get headaches just from not having enough carbs. And what I would recommend doing when you're trying to get rid of the grains is don't worry too much about the blood sugar during that first 2 weeks to a month. So if you start to feel really lousy, go ahead and eat some fruit. And the carbohydrates and the sugars in the fruit will make you feel a little better, and it will help you get through this. The other thing that I found, honestly, that helped a lot was yoga and meditation.
Okay. Yeah, I'm eating an apple with a sunflower butter right now, so...
That's a great snack, but it is what they compare it to a drug addict trying to get off opiates. And not only is your body adjusting, your mind is adjusting too. So it's difficult. And I think this is why most people don't get through that first couple weeks. They just find it too hard.
Yeah, I'm on day five, and when you describe Brittany, you just described exactly how I'm feeling today. Headache,
yeah.
No energy.
Well,
surely this will go away. Other comment. I found out we have a friend that is, we're going to add another truck, but he's got to have 6 months experience before he can come over. And he just decided U.S. Express was the first one, you know, that offered him a job, and that's where he would go. Kevin, he is still with his trainer, and they are already bugging him about leasing a truck. He hasn't even left his trainer.
That is horrible. Horrible. Hey, I got to get to a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I hope you heard that. I hope you heard that last comment. And this may not surprise you. I've seen it happen before. We know it's going on in the industry. But to hear it again from somebody who's experiencing it right now, brand new in the industry, still with a trainer, and they are pushing him to sign a lease purchase. Now, I know I hammer on these things all the time, and let me put out my disclaimer. If you are in one and it is working for you, then I'm not talking to you, and I'm happy for you. I really am. If you can make this work, and people do, and you can become an owner-operator, then I'm congratulations, really. So don't take it personally when I beat up on these things so bad, but this is why. There is no way they should be pushing a lease purchase on this guy. They probably know nothing about him. They know nothing about his finances. They know nothing about whether he has read a single book about business. They know nothing. They don't care. And you have to think about why they push these so hard. They don't do it because of turnover, because this does not lower their turnover numbers. It makes their turnover numbers worse, because the odds of somebody failing in their lease purchase program are much higher. And normally, if they fail in the lease purchase program, they just go someplace else to drive. So it's not about turnover. It's not about the fact that they are just really, really good people and they want to help you get into business. Forget that. That's me. Just kidding. It's about one thing. It's about money. They make more money when you sign that lease purchase deal because you have now assumed all of their biggest risks. You have taken away the fact that they have to pay workers' comp. Gone. You have taken away the fact that they had to pay Social Security and Medicare. Gone. You get to do all of that now. But let's talk about the really, really big risk that they don't like taking, but they are a trucking company, so they don't have a lot of choices. They don't like the risk of owning these new trucks. They want you to take that risk. And that's why they will put anybody in the seat who can fog a mirror. All you need is a heartbeat, and they will put you in this program because it takes the risk of the new truck off of them. So you wonder why there's two things I hammer on all the time. They go together in this case. New trucks and lease purchase programs. And the carriers have got this figured out, and they have got the drivers duping you for everything and putting all the risk of these new trucks on you. And 99% of the people who sign these deals should not be signing them because they are not ready to be in business. They haven't read a single book about being in business. So, yes, I get a little aggravated over this because I have a mission to make the industry a better place to be, and these programs are just negative in almost every way. Let's get back to some phone calls. Let's go to Wisconsin. Lauren, welcome to the program.
Hello. I got a question on, I got a phone call last night that I inherited a truck and a trailer. The lady that I drove for about 12, 13 years had passed away and left it to me.
Okay.
So
let
I'm
me ask you
kinda,
a question before you ask me anything.
Yep.
Before you ask your question, let me ask mine. Had this not happened, would you be doing anything within the next 3 months to become an owner-operator?
Probably not. I was satisfied working with them, working for them. I had my own tankers, I had about 12 of them. About 10 years ago, before that, and then we lost two out of the three customers at an accident, not me, but one of the drivers in a DUI, and so I ended up working for these people, and I just didn't have the heart to leave them.
Well, okay, knowing your history, I'll change my mind a little bit. You've been in business, you grew a business, you understand it. So I will change a little bit and say, if your heart has changed and you are interested in being back in business again, and like I say, I was assuming maybe you had no business experience, but you obviously have a lot. So, you know, maybe this is your opportunity to just go back to driving one truck. Is that what you're thinking about?
Yeah, I'm not. Hiring help was such a issue that was just a royal pain, and
well,
I'm not interested in that at all. I just want to do my thing and be done with it.
Well, and I will say that because you have the experience and the opportunity is here and you're clear about what you want to do, you don't want to grow the company, hire drivers, I get that, I will say that in the 30 years I've been doing this, 2014 was the single best year I have ever seen for owning a truck and trailer and driving it yourself and making money. Single best year, hands down. Doesn't mean it was the greatest year to have a bunch of drivers and a lot of trucks, but it was clearly the best year to have your own authority, be on a percentage contract. There was a lot of money to be made. 2015 isn't shaping up to be quite as strong, but I would still put it in the top five and maybe even the top three of years I can remember in the last 20.
Okay. Well, I had that the people where they had at least on with to stay right with that, and I've been doing the stuff, lining up the maintenance and what have you for the last, since her husband had passed.
Oh, yeah.
So that, you know,
that part of it's not new. Yeah, I have a feeling for you, all that's going to change is your name's on the title. You're going to do a little bit more work than what you used to do, and there's a good chance your income could almost double.
When I started working for him, I had enough of the people just ramming around, and so I drove the truck like it was my truck.
Right.
I've had the fuel gauges for the last 3 years.
Excellent.
So I've got a handle on that. I'm not quite sure how to set up, you know, with the accounting and far as what you set aside, because the self-employment tax and that's all going to be new.
Well, I can help you with that. The two big questions you have, and they're good questions for you to be asking right now, we can solve those pretty easily. One, I can give you a number right now. The very first time you get a settlement and every week after, look at the gross revenue on the settlement before any expenses are taken out at all. Now, that's gross to you. If there's, you know, if there's a company and then you get a percentage, I'm talking about the gross to you. And
right.
Just multiply it by 9% every week.
All right.
And stick it in a savings account. And then once a quarter, you'll write a check out of that account to the IRS, and that will keep you out of trouble. It's never going to be perfect. It might be a little too much in the beginning. 2 or 3 years in, it might be not enough. But it's going to keep you so close that you won't get into trouble.
Okay. How about the maintenance escrow? Or you set that aside, the same account then?
You can. Yeah, it's much easier to keep it in one account and just keep the number separate. What year is this truck?
2007.
And you said there's a trailer as well, right?
Correct, a reefer.
I would set aside, in the beginning to be safe, I would set aside another 20 cents a mile to cover maintenance on the truck and trailer.
Okay.
Now, when I say that's all maintenance. That's literally every time you pull in to buy a light bulb or a set of windshield wipers, but it's also to replace a clutch and tires when that kind of stuff happens.
Okay. Yeah. Is there if it gets up to a certain level, then throttle it back or just keep plugging that away? And
well, the second question that you had, or the first one about the accounting, you know, if you call us, we'll set up your accounting for you. We'll do the first month for you, and then we'll show you how to do it. And it's really simple. Then by the time you start to build up money in that account, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months, all we have to do is look at your report in profit gauges in our program and say, well, you know, it looks like your maintenance costs are really starting to average about 15 cents a mile. So why don't we cut it back?
Okay. I just had a brain freeze. Oh, what I've been doing is all the fuel and that stuff I put on my card, and then I just turn in an expense report when I get home, and they give me a check. Can we keep doing things that way?
Just keep putting it on your card, and when you get home once a month, you're going to sit down and do your accounting, and we'll show you how, and again, it's really simple. But, yeah, you can just keep doing it just like that. And if you have any other questions about the accounting, we'll be right there to answer them all the time. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment here. Let me take a quick look at what we have for questions. We're pretty good. It's very possible we're just going to record this one more hour, but I'll let you know before we wrap it up if we're going to go do another one. Here we go. Let's get started. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the calls. Let's head off to Georgia. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing there? I've got a problem come up with my 2000 Freightliner I've got. It's a warning low coolant coming on there, even though there's nothing wrong with the coolant or the radiator. Have you any ideas there as to what I can do to sort that out?
Yeah, you know, the first place to check is the sensor right in the bottle. Depending on the truck make and model, there's lots of different configurations, but almost all of them, the sensor is right in the bottle or the tank where you see, you know, normally you see two levels, cold and hot. And we try to keep the water somewhere in between the two when it's cold. Look in that bottle, and there is usually a sensor. And that sensor is what tells the system whether or not the coolant has gone down below that. And that's normally what causes this.
Is that the thing that would, if it went low enough, it would actually shut it off?
Yeah, there's two different levels, and on some trucks there's actually two different sensors, one in this bottle.
This one only had the one.
Then what can happen is if that sensor registers, whether it's bad or incorrect or not, if it registers that there's no coolant, it can shut the engine down.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And is there any place else in the truck that it can either be reset or there couldn't be anything on the radiator itself, a sensor or anything there, right?
Usually not. Like I said, there are some trucks that you will find another sensor in the radiator itself. It's pretty unusual. But the other possibility, because again, we're dealing with electronics, it could be possible that the sensor itself is just fine, that we have a break in the wire anywhere between the sensor and the ECM, and it's giving us the wrong voltage. Could be a corroded wire. It could be an ECM problem itself, that the ECM is getting the right signal. It's just not reading it properly. All of those things are possible. But on a problem like this, I like to start with the most likely thing, and those sensors usually aren't very expensive. If you understand electronics and, you know, doing some ohm reading and some other things, you can actually test these. But sometimes it's easier if you don't know that and you don't want to pay the shop to do it, to just grab a sensor and throw it in and see if it fixes the problem.
Right. Sounds good. Yeah. Okay. I appreciate it. I'll do that.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi Kevin, how are you?
Doing good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was just calling. I am going to be getting out of the business, and I had a truck I'm putting advertising for sale, and I thought maybe if any of your listeners might be interested in a 2000 Volvo or an M14 Cummins.
I have a feeling a lot of my listeners are interested in a 2000 Volvo with an M14 Cummins.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, I hate to get rid of it, but yeah, but I think it's about time.
Yeah, so There's a couple things we can do here. If you're comfortable giving out your phone number on the air, we can do that. I would expect you'll get a lot of calls. If not, you know, one of the things you can do is leave the number with us, and I can tell people to send us an email, and we'll put you guys together.
Yeah, if you could do it that way, I would appreciate it.
Okay. We can do that. So what I'll do, why don't you tell us a little more about the truck? How many miles? Has it ever had an in-frame? What kind of upgrades? That kind of stuff.
Okay. I bought the truck from the original owner. I'm the second owner, and there's only been three drivers in the truck. And that's N14 Cummins with the 10-speed, the sliding fifth wheel. It's an automatic greaser on it. It's the S-Power auxiliary here. And 11R225 tires, all aluminum wheels. And they always give me good service, and it's a clean truck. And I know with that amount of miles on it, it's going to be, you know, eventually an in-frame. Depending on how you want to do it before you start out with it, with the in-frame on it, or however they want it to work that. But the reason I'm getting rid of it is because I just had open heart surgery about 9 days ago. So.
Oh, boy. Well, glad to hear you're here and talking to us. Do you want to let everybody know a price or not?
Yeah, I was hoping to get like $11,500 out of it. I'm asking
$11,500.
Yeah.
That's a very, very fair price. I mean, this is the kind of truck that I tell people to look for all the time. So I understand Lisa has your information. So if anybody is interested in that truck, I would be, if I were you. If you are in the market for a used truck, this is a really solid truck at a great price with a lot of potential. So all you need to do is send us an email. support@letstruck.com. I'll say that again while you're grabbing something to write with. Just send us an email and say, I'm interested in the 2000 Volvo I heard about on Kevin's show. We'll respond to the email with the phone number. You guys can work it out. So the email again, send it to support@letstruck.com. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. I tried to talk to you yesterday in South Carolina and got phased out of the cell tower. But I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about this 93 Freightliner that I put to work over the road. I've had the truck about 10 years, but just over the road the last month, I leased on with the company. And
okay.
I used to change my oil about every 10 or 12,000 miles using Rotella. Well, it's a little harder to do that when I'm on the road so much. I'm coming up on 20,000 miles. Now, it does use some oil. I probably put a gallon in it about every 3,000 to 4,000 miles. But what blew me away is in listening to your – I can't afford your course yet, but I'm getting my free education every day. When you're not on live, I'm listening to your podcast all day. And I started back in the Decembers, and I'm learning a lot. But I have yet to hear – I hear some people talking about not changing their oil for 40 or 50,000 miles. How is that possible?
Well, let me throw out a number that will really shock you then. I know of two trucks right now that I've been tracking for several years, regular callers, and we watch their oil samples. I know of two trucks right now that are over 600,000 miles without changing their oil.
How is that possible?
I'm going to get to that. Let me give you another example. And this isn't new technology. It's been around for a long time. Back in 1995, I started doing this on a brand new truck that I bought back then. It was a Ford, believe it or not, with a Series 60 Detroit. And I bought the truck brand new, started doing this from day one, kept the truck till it had 1.3 million miles on it, never touched the engine,
wow.
Literally nothing on the engine. And I only did 4 oil changes in that entire time.
Wow.
So let me ask you a question.
Wow. Okay.
Let me ask you a question. A couple questions.
All right.
Because this will help you understand it. Tell me why you changed the oil at 12,000 miles.
I've always been told to.
Exactly.
So I've always changed because the oil is dirty, and they say, so you change oil and filters. The only filter I don't change every time is I change the water filter every other time, but I change the fuel filters and the oil filter every time.
Okay, and that's a good answer, and it's one of only two possible answers to this. The oil is dirty, so we need to change it. Well, if it's dirty, right, didn't we already do damage?
Probably.
Yeah, we did. And the only other option is, well, it's not dirty yet. It's still clean, so I better change it before it gets dirty, which means we're throwing away clean oil. I don't like either answer. So the next question I have for you, how long does oil last?
That I have no idea. I'm sure a long time.
Well, let's think about it. It's been in the ground for a couple hundred million years.
Right.
It never wears out. Oil and the properties in oil never wear out. What happens is the oil gets too dirty to do its job, but it never wears out. In fact, we recycle oil. A lot of the oil you buy in the store comes from recycled base stock.
Right.
So all we need to do is keep our oil so clean that we don't have to change it. And there are filters on the market called bypass filters that do exactly that. They are designed to filter the oil very slowly and very fine, and they clean the oil so well that we don't change it based on a number. We do an oil sample, and we let the lab tell us when we're going to replace the oil. So the filter, there's a bunch of them on the market. I've tested them all, virtually all of them. And after testing them for the last 20 years, I've been using the OPS EcoPure for over a decade now, and that's what most of our listeners use. I'm almost out of time, but if you go to our website, letstruck.com/store, you can look at the unit and you can call us or call OPS. I've got to get out of here. I'm all out of time. Thanks for joining me. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, we are going to record one more hour, and we're not going to be able to do 3 hours today, but we are going to do one more hour, so we're going to go ahead and get started right now.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls. We answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we talk about it. Question to the table, and I'll do my best to get you an answer. Many times, if I don't have the answer, somebody else listening will jump in and help us out. So we are, I think I'm just going to get right to the phone calls today. We always have lots of calls, but let's get to some phone calls and see how many we can knock out today. Let's go to North Dakota. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. First of all, last show, you had a book that you said at the beginning, The Willpower. I can't remember the last part of that.
Yeah, that is a book that I read late last year. And you know, I was getting to the point on books where I wasn't really feeling like I was getting a lot of new ideas. It seemed like I was just reading the same stuff said in different ways over and over and over. And I came across this book, and it was so well written, and it was such a new idea for me. And I have to say, I have made some significant changes in my life since the end of last year, some pretty big stuff, and I love the results. Many of them came from listening to this book, and it's called The Willpower Instinct, and it's by Kelly McGonigal. She is a professor at Stanford. I actually took the online course as well. They did this. She does this book, this whole concept as a class at Stanford, and they offered it last fall the first time online, and I took it. And it was really the same as the book. It was just a guided course to help you understand the book better and work through it. But it really is a fantastic book for anybody who has struggled changing anything. The big one that comes to mind is weight. You know, we've been told so many times that people are fat because they're weak, they're fat because they eat too much. And I have read a couple books recently that absolutely dispel both of those things. It's not that you eat too much, it's what you're eating that's wrong. And it's not that you're weak, it's just that we literally only have so much willpower. And that's what this book talks about, that you use up your willpower just like you use up a muscle. And you can train your willpower just like you train a muscle. But you have to understand it, and you have to do all the right things. And that was really what I learned in that book. It was amazing.
Sounds exciting. I'll have to see if I can find it on Audible
It is on Audible.
Sweet. My other question is how did that DG engine oil cleaner work at the CMCs?
Really well. You know, it's funny that in the last 6 months, you know, prior to that, we never really talked about cleaning out engines. You know, we just did our thing. We did oil samples. We extended our drains. We watched all that stuff. But there really, I didn't know of any really good ways of cleaning out an engine. And honestly, I wasn't all that concerned about it. I mean, I've taken a lot of engines well past a million miles. I've looked at them when we've torn them down. And there's some stuff in there, some carbon buildup here and there, but nothing major. One of the things we're finding, especially on the newer engines, there is more junk because of all the EGR coming back to the engine. Our fuels are changing, so that's causing some injector issues. And keeping the engine clean may be more important than what I realized. And I'm still learning about this. But all of a sudden, we have two ways. One is this engine flush, which is a very, very controlled situation, where you're running a high detergent oil through the engine on a machine. The engine's barely turning over. When the engine is clean, we filter it, you know, down real fine so we can see all the junk we're getting out of it. It was pretty surprising, some of the big junk that was coming out of these engines. And then we put oil back in it. We put it back out on the road. Everything's good. That's one way. I really like that way. I was impressed with what I saw at the CMC. We had a lot of guys do it. The other way that I said was a horrible idea the first time I heard about it was new to me additive on the market. And I'm still researching that. I'm in touch with the founder. I said running a high detergent through your engine while it was going down the road was a horrible idea. But after seeing how this product was developed, why it was developed, and what they've done to protect the engine, I'm more interested. I'm not saying it is the way to go yet, but I'm saying I was probably wrong in my initial reaction, and I'm going to work with the company and do some more research and then let people know.
Both of those sound very exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it, Kevin.
Yeah, the engine flush, I can tell you, hands down, problems with that. Well, no, let me say one. The company that was there that does this, they're recommending every 100,000 miles. I think that's a little too much. I don't think that is necessary at all. I understand why they recommend it, and you know they'll show you reasons why they think you should. I would say, honestly, on a pre-emission engine, I would do this engine flush every 500,000 miles, and on anything after 04, I would do it every 250,000 miles.
Sounds great. Thank you very much for your time, Kevin. Looking forward to hearing about the results.
All right, will do. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to California. Adam, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin. I sent over oil, or asked Lisa to bring up the oil sample I just had done for the truck. And what do you know about the trailer tires that the XCAs are no longer available? What do you know about the replacement ones that they came out with for the Super Singles? The Energy X1Ts?
Yeah, the Energy T. Well, you know, I don't have any direct experience with it, but understanding how and why it was developed, you know, Michelin redesigned their whole line of wide singles with the Energy D, now the Energy T. The idea being that, you know, they put a lot of research and development into keeping the rolling resistance really low, but extending the life of the tire. And so far, the results that I'm hearing back from people are pretty positive.
I already paid for them. I got to get back to Florida to get them put on.
Yeah, so far, everybody that's used them, they love the handling, they love the ride, and they seem to be lasting really well.
Oh, okay. All right. I appreciate it. And what about the oil sample?
You know, this oil sample looks really good, and you recently had some fuel issues.
Well, I'm still having the fuel. That oil sample was pre-fuel issue. The fuel issue was literally that same week that I left that it's happened.
Got it.
After I took the sample.
I was going to say, normally when we see a fuel issue like you had, I get some indication in the oil sample, and I'm not seeing any, but now it makes sense. This is a great-looking sample. I mean, whatever happened after this, and your fuel dilution is non-existent. Soot is very low. The base is holding up really well on this oil. Your wear metals are low, about not even half of what I would expect to see. This is a really good, you know, they put it as a level one because your iron's at 21. We've got 53,000
right.
miles on the oil. I would expect your iron to be around 50, and it's 21. So this is a super clean sample.
Okay, and I added about a gallon and a half, give or take, and that many miles.
Oh, yeah. That is amazing that your base is holding up so well. That tells us that the engine is running really efficiently, and we're not creating a lot of junk.
Okay, and I'll tell you a little update on the fuel thing. I'm still having the same issue as I told you about the check valve and possibly the FAST causing the problem. I'm having the same issue with the starting, and the funny thing was when I went to go start the truck the other day, I actually had to prime the FAST system to get it started.
So have we checked all your fuel lines?
I the only thing I've done, I got to be honest with you, I've been on the road, so the only thing that I've done so far is I've put some tape on some fittings on the FAST system. I haven't had a chance to get it back and get any. I need to get to a Freightliner dealership to get the high side a pressure tested to make sure that it's
me. Yeah, it could be a check valve, but I think it's also time to replace all of the fuel lines, rubber and plastic. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Virginia. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
Doing good. What can I help you with today?
Want to talk about lease purchase options. Haven't heard anything good about them. Is there any ones that are decent out there?
There are. I'm not going to tell you who they are.
Okay. More homework?
No. For one thing, I don't track them. Because even when I did, they change over time, and there's so many that it would be a full-time job. The other thing, though, is no matter how good the program is, there's two major reasons so many people fail in these. One is that the programs suck. That's one of the biggest reasons. The programs suck. They're not designed to help anybody succeed except the carrier. But there's another major problem, and that is that when it comes to being prepared and being ready to go into business, the people signing these deals suck just as much as the deals do. Now,
right.
I'm sure that'll piss a bunch of people off, but I don't mean they suck as a person. I said that as far as being prepared to do this and being ready to go into business, they suck. And they do, and that's why these things keep failing. So I decided many, many years ago, I'm not going to recommend any of these programs to anybody because my failure rate would be astronomical. My success rate would be almost non-existent. There's too many things stacked against people. So I decided that my plan was going to be to try to talk as many people out of signing these deals as possible. And if people hear everything I have to say and they still go sign, they're either an idiot or they've done enough hard work and maybe they have a chance to succeed. One of the two.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit about you. Tell me about finances.
Well, finances, I'm nowhere near ready to go. And no, that would be the main reason I'm not going to. I don't have the little nest egg sitting in the bank ready to go with and, you know, to help on the downtime. I've kind of been a company driver for 8 years and just trying to look to expand myself, but I don't have that cushion behind me to help me during downtime.
Okay, and that's good that you understand that. So let's look at the lease purchase concept in general. What, if you had to guess, what would you think the number one reason is that people sign lease purchase deals instead of just going out and buying a truck?
Financing.
Money, right?
Yeah, money. I mean,
they're probably missing two things. They're probably missing any kind of cash to put down, and
right.
They're probably missing a good enough credit score to borrow any money, right?
That seems to be what they all the lease purchase people target is, you know, zero, no money up front.
It's just sign the dotted line. We don't do any credit checks. We don't ask any questions. So let's think about that. If we got the top 100 business experts in the country, whatever that even means, people who really know a lot about business, in have written books about it, have started many successful businesses, how many do you think would say that, oh, you don't need any money or any credit to start a business? It's not even the fact that you need the money or the credit. It's what got you to that point that you don't have any money or any credit.
Well, I know exactly what got me to that point, but...
Well, and we need to look at that. I mean, what kind of skills or lack of skills or lack of discipline got you to the point, and I don't mean you, I'm speaking in general, but I'm talking to
you
as well. What lack of skills or lack of discipline got you to the point where you don't have any money and you don't have any credit? And then are those the same skills and discipline that you're going to need to succeed in business?
Right. Well, my dad, well, I won't say downfall, but, you know, my children just was kind of holding me back for a little bit.
Right. And so. That's a fact of life. But the only way that we're ever going to get to the place where we can do this is to be brutally honest. And you know, I watch Dr. Phil once in a while, and you know, he has some pretty good sayings, and one of his is, you can't fix something that you can't acknowledge. You've got to acknowledge what the problem was before we can fix it, and this is where most people fail. Most people just think, well, I had a lot of medical bills, or, you know, my kids needed surgery, or whatever it was. Things happen to us in life. You know, there's another saying that, you know, our results in life are 10% what happens to us and 90% what we do about it. So we could go back and say, yeah, it might have been medical bills that pushed you over the edge, but you should have had medical insurance. And then people will say, well, I didn't qualify. Maybe you should have been healthier. I mean, we can always go back, and we need to go back to personal responsibility so we see where the problem started and we can fix it. And then everything will get better. So no matter what the reason is, we need to go back and look and say, okay, but what could you have done different so that you wouldn't have been in this position? Because there are people with 14 kids who have started businesses. There are people who have been wiped out by medical emergencies that have started businesses. And so it can be done. We know it can be done. I want to help people do it. Now, let's say that here's why the whole lease purchase thing makes no sense to me whatsoever. It's too big of a risk. You're either going to start it when you're not ready to be in business, period, and some people will make it through. It's a very small percentage. Or you're going to do the hard work to get you to the place where you are ready to be in business, and guess what happens when you get there? You don't need the lease purchase anymore.
Right. You put yourself into the position. Right.
Yeah, you could just go buy a truck. So that's why I won't ever make a recommendation to anybody about which lease purchase is better or good or what they should go sign. My only answer is, start doing the hard work to get yourself prepared to be in business, and when you get there, you're not going to need or want the lease purchase anymore.
Right. Yeah, I understand. I'm ways away from that.
Well, good. Then you're asking the right questions. Let me ask you a question. And this will tell you where you need to be focusing. Tell me the last three books you've read about business.
None.
Okay.
Haven't done that.
Yeah. If we were going to do most things in life, wouldn't we want some instruction on how to do it? Wouldn't we want somebody that's done it before to say, look, don't reinvent the wheel. Here is how you do things step by step. That's just a logical thing to do. And so many people, when they get into business, just think that somehow they're good at business, just naturally. Well, I don't know anybody who is. I know some people who have good habits and good tendencies, and it might help them succeed, but business is like anything else. You have to learn how to do it. So my biggest recommendation, you've got 60 hours every week to learn, and there are 10,000 books about business.
Right. Okay. Well, start off on Audible. Is there a listing on your website of a good place to start?
Yeah, there is. Go to Audible, and you know, it's so hard for I could make so many recommendations. Let me ask you another question. How do you feel about change? What's your gut reaction when you hear that you're going to have to make a major change? Or you don't even get to choose the major change. It's just going to happen to you. Something's going to change. How do you feel?
It's more of a challenge situation than anything else. You know, you have to embrace change. And
guys. And a lot of people don't think that way. They panic. They get stressed. They get a lot of anxiety. And then there are some books I would recommend. You don't need those. I would recommend one of the first books you listen to is called The Personal MBA.
MBA, Personal MBA. Okay.
the personal MBA. It's just a really quick overview of business in general. It's all the things that they teach you at in an MBA program, a Master's of Business Administration. But it's boiled down to plain English and stuff that makes sense. It's just a good overview of business. Then my second book that I would recommend, I'm going to give you three. The second one I would recommend is by Larry Winget, and the title is It's Called Work for a Reason. And the third book I would recommend, Stephen Covey, it's a classic, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I would start with those three books, and then if you want more recommendations, call me back. But there are, just look up Larry Winget's book recommendations. Look up Seth Godin's book recommendations. If you start looking at other people's book lists, you will find hundreds of books. That's what I do. I go to people that I respect, and I look to see what they're reading and recommending. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. So real quick, we've got two more segments to record. I might be able to squeeze in another call or two. So if you were to press one on your phone right now, there's a good chance that I'll be able to get to you. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. You know, I was talking a lot about getting ready to be in business, and so few people do this. You know, I started one of my other shows about change, and the single biggest change I think people could make. I talked about some habits around money and health being really important. But there may even be another more important one, because I think it might be the key that helps motivate you to make the other changes. And that is the habit that very, very few people have. The habit of continuous learning, learning something new all the time. I can't think of a group of people anywhere in the country, except maybe the unemployed, that have more time to learn than truck drivers. And the thing is, if the unemployed would just spend any time learning, they wouldn't be unemployed for very long. Then they'd have a job, and then they'd have to fight, like many people do, to find time to learn something new. You know, when you work 40 to 60 hours a week in any other job other than driving, there's just not a lot of time to learn. When you drive, you have 60 hours a week to learn. I've been saying for years it is the single most important thing I've done in my life that has helped me achieve the successes that I've achieved and helped me recover from the non-successes, the failures, the flops. I've had lots and lots of those too. But it's the books that I've read, the seminars that I've attended, the things that I've learned that have helped me overcome those things. And if you are not listening to audiobooks, say any stronger that you need to be. It will change your life. If you are thinking about getting into business and you don't start listening to books about getting into business and about being in business, then when you fail, and there's a good chance you will have nobody to blame but yourself. Because the opportunity is there for you to listen. The material is there for you to listen to. All you have to do is the hard work. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Texas. Jesse, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you, Kevin?
Doing good. What can I help you with today?
Yes, Kevin. First of all, I want to thank you and your team for the podcast. I just recently came upon them, and they are a true blessing. I've learned a lot, and I listen to them constantly. And just like what you said, for those of us that don't have time to sit down and go to school somewhere, seeing that people like yourself that have done the homework, that done the research, and are willing to share it with others, it's really blessing us and helping us. And you know, and teaching us something new that we can learn along the way, keep us from making mistakes. With that said, I really wanted to ask you what your input is. I want to buy a new truck. We're financially set up to do it. You know, we want to start our own business in trucking. I am now a company driver for a company that I wanted to try out for, you know, several months to see how the runs are and the lanes and how happy I was going to be with the way they work. And I'm pretty happy with them and comfortable with buying my own truck and bringing it on with them here. And
okay.
I wanted to ask you, you know, what your input was on a brand new truck.
When you say brand new, are you talking like 2016, nobody's ever owned it before, brand new, or just new to you?
Yes, exactly. Yes, a brand new truck, nobody's owned. I know I've learned a lot about the gliders from you, listening to what you said about them, and I'm really interested in that as well.
Okay. And I'm glad, because here's the thing. I can't say this strong enough. I would never buy a new truck with new emissions. And for me, that means any truck after 04. So we actually started emissions in 04, not 07 like a lot of people think. In 04, we had EGR on most engines. We had ACERT on the cats. In 07, 08, we got the DPFs. That made them even worse. In 2010, 2011, we got the SCR and the DEF. That made them more complicated. I will not own those engines, and I will not recommend them to anybody who wants to make money. Now, just like earlier when I talked about the lease purchase programs, if you have one of these trucks, don't take it personally. I'm not talking to you. If you have one, great. I hope it works for you. For most people, it doesn't. They're expensive. They've got all kinds of maintenance problems. They don't get the fuel mileage they should get. There's a lot of downtime. But if you've got one, you know, and some people feel like they have to have one because they're running California. That's their choice. I would not choose to run my business that way. I think these trucks are way too big of a risk. So if you're asking me my opinion, scratch off the idea of a new truck other than a glider. Because what a glider does is it gets rid of the biggest problem I have with new trucks, the only problem I have with new trucks, which is the engine. I'd love new trucks. I mean, I'd love the, you know, we've improved aerodynamics, we've improved driver comfort, we've improved safety, we've improved convenience. It's nice to have everything new. I love that. I bought new trucks for years, but I will not own one of these emission engines until they figure out how to get them right, and we're not even close yet. So the glider gives me what I consider to be the best of both worlds. We get all the new technology, the new aerodynamics, the comfort, the safety, the convenience, all those things, but we get to stick with old engine technology. So I am clearly a fan of building gliders. But let's talk about you, because as much as I love gliders, I get a little nervous when somebody is going to spend that much money for their first truck and their first time in business. Have you ever been in any other business?
I have. I started trucking back in 1994, you know, for the company. I tried one of those outrageous lease programs a long time ago, you know, when I was very new at this. And then I got out of trucking when we had our first kid and went into managing for a company. I'm not going to say the name of the company, but we did distribution of gases and specialty gases and whatnot. So I was the manager of that place for 12 years. And so I was still dealing with the trucks, the DOT issues, the drivers, driver files, all those things, and managing the, you know, the trucks and whatnot. And okay. In December, we took a change. My wife and I, and we moved our family to Texas. It's a new city for us. My father's been an owner-operator for a long time. He's probably listening to you right now. You know, he's been trucking many, many years. He's an owner-operator now, but he went the route of lease purchase, and he dealt with that. And you know, it was a lot of things that he taught me about it, that just to stay away from it and whatnot.
Okay.
The company that I'm with, you know, they try to push the lease purchase program. They get beautiful trucks and whatnot, so you'll get them. But I knew right off the bat that I wasn't going to do that. The reason that I want to get a new truck, you know, I know it's a big step, but there's several reasons why. You know, one of the things is where I bought our home, we're not allowed to put a truck there and be able to work on it myself. I'm on a pretty much regional route, and that's where I'm staying at for now. I'm running, you know, to Memphis and back to El Paso, Texas weekly, and then doing a Dallas short run back and forth to get, you know, around 4,000 miles a week. So it's pretty much stable, you know, route that I do, and I'm home on weekends because I also minister at church on Sundays. It's a lot to do, but I've kind of got it worked out where I need to get a truck that I know, you know, it's going to have the warranty. I don't know shop in the city where I'm living at now. I haven't built relationships with mechanics yet. And so, you know, getting a new truck makes a little bit more sense as far as being able to get it worked at the dealership and you know, having some of the warranty coverage and things like that for now.
Okay. Well, I like the way you're thinking. I like the fact that you have some management experience that's close as we can get to business experience without running the business. So that's all going to help you. I like the fact that your father's an owner-operator. He's been helping you. Those are all things in your favor. So I'm getting a little closer to maybe leaning towards a glider. But I have some other ideas, but let's talk about finance. How much cash do you have saved?
Well, we lived in Oklahoma, and you know, during that time that I was managing, I was able to, you know, buy properties, buy some houses on a very small budget, but I thank God that I was able to learn a lot from Dave Ramsey, listening to his books and, you know, a lot of biblical, you know, information of how to manage and be responsible in everything,
good,
you know, in everything that we are granted to have. And so, you know, we've sold the homes in Oklahoma. We've been able to buy a house in El Paso, pay off everything we have in debt.
Okay, hold that thought. I want to come back. I love the fact that there's no debt. You've worked through this. I want to come back and see how much cash we have, and then we'll talk about this. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rothman. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rothman. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I am going to head back to Texas. So, Jesse, it sounds like you've been doing a lot of hard work. I love the fact that you're virtually debt-free. How much did you have to borrow for the house?
Actually, the house we bought in El Paso is about $174,000.
Okay.
And, you know, we put down $35,000.
Excellent. So you've already got some equity in it. I love that. So other than that house, you say you were able to pay off the rest of the debt?
Yeah, from the sales of the property that we had in Oklahoma, we were able to wipe out our credit cards, which we didn't have a whole lot. I mean, we don't use them only for emergencies, things like that.
Yeah.
The move was pretty expensive, so we covered all our credit cards and paid off one of the vehicles we had, so we just owe on one vehicle. Other than that, that's really the only debt that we have. It's just the mortgage and one vehicle.
Okay.
And then we have cash flow. We have about $25,000 saved up.
Okay. So that gives me all the numbers I need. And, you know, if you were to use every penny on the down payment for the glider, you're still looking at financing in excess of $100,000. Now, as a first-time buyer, you're going to get hit with a high interest rate on a truck, probably in excess of 10%. If you have really, really strong credit, 800+, you might do a little better, but they really hit first-time buyers hard. So that leaves you with a couple options. You really have to keep your finance term short, like 3 years, which means you're going to be paying, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 a month on a truck payment. Or you got to pay a lot of interest because the rate's so high and you're going to go out farther. I don't really like either one of those options. What about this? Just something to think about. What about taking your $25,000? I had a caller earlier that had what I consider to be a great, great money-making truck, and it was for $11,500. He was offering it for sale. It was a 2000 Volvo. They hold up really well inside and body-wise and all of that. It had an N14. It's only had two owners. There have only been three drivers ever in the truck. It had good specs. And for $11,500, think about it. You walk in, you pay cash, you still have $13,000 or $14,000 left sitting in the bank, and you make the same amount of money as you would with that $150,000 truck.
Right, right.
And
that, I mean,
let's say after 6 months you go, hey, I'm pretty good at this. We're putting money in the bank. Things are going great. Then if you really wanted to, go trade that one in on a glider.
Right. And, you know, that's the initial plan that we had, because I had a gentleman that, you know, well, it's in the past, but I had a a 2002 W900 already worked out. We had a price tag.
Don't do the W9. Don't do the W9.
Well, I can't anymore. He sold it.
Yeah, the reason being, if you go with a classic truck, a non-aerodynamic, you lose the potential of a full mile per gallon in fuel mileage. That means $10,000 a year left on the table that you can't get. And that's, I just can't understand. But there are lots of aerodynamic trucks. The one I just talked about, we get calls every week about this. But think about how much less risk there is in this model of spending $10,000 to $15,000 on a good, solid, older truck. Now, as you start to make money every week, you can put some money into it. I mean, you can keep up. Honestly, we've put together numbers where I've shown where we could put $60,000 into an old truck, and I'd still rather own it than anything new. And you just do it over time. The truck will get better and better as you go. You're good at managing money, so you're going to have the cash as you go. You've got the cushion there if you go this way of having cash right from week one. Any point, you could just say, hey, you know what? I really do want the glider. I'm going to go trade this one in. Nothing would stop you from doing that. But if you buy the glider first and things don't go right, you're screwed. I mean, buy a $150,000 glider, 3 months later, you have a hard time getting $100,000 out of it.
Wow. Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah,
see, that's the thing with the truck, you know, well, the company requires the 2000, well, they say 2003, but if it's pretty clean and it passes their inspection, I think they'll accept the 2002 and under.
If their policy is 2003, then I'm sure if you go to them with a clean 2000, they'll accept it.
I believe so too, because they're very, you know, they're very safety oriented. And like I said, I'm not running all over the place. I'm pretty much on a dedicated route.
Right. And if you had to get the 03, 03s are still pre-emission, most of them. You have to be a little careful with an 03. But if they just absolutely say, nope, we're not going to do it, I don't think they'll do that. But if they do, then you look around for an 03 that we can pick up for $15,000. I just think that you are going to be in a much, much better position if you do that. It minimizes your risk, and it gives you more opportunities and choices in the future. Once you pull the trigger on that glider, as much as I love gliders, a lot of your choices go away. You can't go backwards. It's very, very difficult. You'll lose a lot of money. So think about that. You're doing so many things right. I want to see you doing the right things and minimize your risk. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call today.
You're welcome. What's on your mind today?
Well, I have a comment and I have a question. My comment is thank you for yet another great CMC.
Well, thank you for coming. And I have to agree with you. I know I say this every year, but it really does get better every year. And it is a big part of what our team does to make it better every year. But more important than that, it is the people who come and attend who keep making it better.
Well, I agree. The crowd this year was even better than last year.
And I think they're going to be even better next year.
Yep, there'll definitely be more of us.
That's right.
My question for you today is, what are you reading?
You know, I will tell you what I'm reading, and I think I have gotten myself into a bad habit that I need to break. I never used to do this, and I think it is a downside of the Kindle and the audiobooks and everything being so easy. I never used to read even two books at the same time. I would get a book, I would read it until I was done, and then I would start another book. And it's been almost 2 years now. I started reading multiple books at the same time, and I don't think it's a good idea. So I think this is one of those things that I'm going to put on my list of habits to change. I'm going to finish the books I'm reading currently, and then after that, I'm going to set a habit that I only start one book and finish it before I move on to the next. But right now, I am reading, I just finished Effortless Healing, and I actually went back through that one twice. I am rereading The Eighth Habit from Stephen Covey. You hear me talking all the time about the seven habits of highly effective people. This is The Eighth Habit, and it's a whole book, a very large book. So it's more than just a habit. It's actually, I talked a lot at the CMC about mission and purpose and those kind of things, and that's what The Eighth Habit is all about. The Eighth Habit is really about developing your life's purpose. So I'm reading that, and I am also reading, I don't know how I ever missed this book, and this book, I don't know how I want to say it. It's been around a very long time. It's probably controversial in some circles. I don't know how I missed it. I got this off of, I talked a little bit earlier about, I look to see what people that I look up to and respect are reading, and I happened to check Larry Winget's books, recommended books. It's called The Science of Mind. It's by Ernest Holmes. It was written in the early 1900s. I guess it's a big deal. Like, whole religions have sprouted up around some of these ideas, and I don't know how I missed it, but I just started reading that. So those are the three books I'm reading right now.
Three at a time. That's better than I could do.
Well, I think I'm going to quit that. I like I say, I don't think it's a good idea. I'm having a harder time staying focused on one concept and one idea. But I'm going to finish these three and go back to reading one book at a time. Thanks for asking. I do appreciate it. I wish I had more time. I love talking about books. But the music's playing. I've got to get out of here. We will see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.